We'll start out with Senate Bill number 179, and ask Mr. Baden back up to the table. And then we'll go on. Actually, we are on teleconference. We'll start with Senate Bill 179, and then we will go to SJR 12 and then SB 182. So let's pick it up where we left off last meeting, and perhaps you could summarize the department's analysis. Excuse me?
Want us to adopt it?
We can adopt the CS.
Mr. Chairman, I would move for the adoption of committee substitute for Senate Bill number 179, CRA, individual recommendations. Oh, no, unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? There are no objections. We have adopted committee substitute for Senate Bill number 179. And so,
Mr. Chairman, last time we met, I believe there were six issues that questions had been raised about that we didn't fully cover, and I'd like to cover two of those, and we have some written material on several of them also that I'd like to share with you. The first question that was asked that I'd like to respond to is, what villages in SB 179 are covered by the remote maintenance worker program? And I have a handout on that. And also, to go along with that, I'd like to share with you the list of the villages that are covered by all the remote maintenance programs. I think, as you can see, the majority, better than 70% of the proposed projects are covered by the existing remote maintenance work program.
In those communities that are not covered by by the remote maintenance worker program, I assume there are some that are, well, I guess they're all taking care of their own systems. Do you have a list that is that you're proposing to add to that program?
Mr. Chairman, the government proposed budget does not anticipate expanding the program at this time. In prior years, the program has grown out of, I would term a local initiative, and villages have got together and approached the legislature, and the legislature has always, the program has expanded through legislative add-ons during the budget process.
Okay. And how much do we spend on this program?
$579,000.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead. If there are no questions from the committee, just please proceed with
the... Okay. The second issue that I'm here to address was Senator Zaroff asked about Larson Bay, and we responded direct to his office this morning. And the project for the rest of the committee was designed and constructed under the U.S. Public Health Service leadership, and they admit they made a mistake, and they are going out this summer and spending $350,000 to correct that error. The lines were put in too shallow, and they're going to put them down at least 8 feet, maybe put in 3 or 4 feet. Okay, the other issues that I'd like to ask representatives from the Environmental Quality Division to address included questions concerning Marshall as to what the department's response has been. Also, there were questions concerning the surface water drinking rule that had been implemented by federal government, and also the impacts with MARPOL with respect to capital projects.
Mr. Chairman, while they're coming up, Gary, you had handed out some information to us on with the 3-8-91 as the date, and I see that differs from what we have in the committee substitute. Was there some change in the order of community priorities?
Not in change in the order of community priorities. There were, I believe, one project was added to that list that was brought to our attention after we had.
Well, it doesn't seem to go quite that way. I mean, it's...
Well, the order that the bill is written doesn't necessarily follow the priority list. I think all the projects are still there, and there are no differences as far as projects between the two. It's just the order got a little confused. And the first one that I produced and gave to Senator Adams' office was arranged by health category and was not sorted by priority within the health category. And I made a mistake, and I think I mentioned last time, I spent half the morning trying to figure out the order that that first list that I was given was generated.
Well, I know, but this is different than your list of 3891. The order is different. And the only reason I say that is there a significance if we're able to, you know, only fund X number how they appear.
I have not compared the order that's in SB 179 with mine. I just had a problem with back.
Well, I wonder, Mr. Chairman, if that's anything, you know, we checked on it. It is different, and I don't know what the significance of that is necessarily.
I guess it kind of gets to the whole issue of how much money will be available and what prioritizations are appropriate. I think it is, you know, the department's priority list is available to us, and it is in the packet. I think that individual legislators, I think, are going to have to be responsible for determining priorities within their own districts, I assume, up in the finance committee, but and with input from other districts that are not necessarily represented on the finance committee. But I guess as long as information is provided by the department, I am not uncomfortable with the bill not being in priority order, because if the bill is amended, it can be amended in a variety of ways, not necessarily dropping off the last few projects or whatever. So I don't see that as necessarily a problem. I don't know how I suppose we could decide to prioritize those, analyze the department's analysis and see whether or not we agreed with it or not.
Mr. Chairman, the only thing is certainly with the school, the priority list, and with the department, there's some analysis that goes into health and a whole lot of other issues. And I'm not going to, I'll certainly support this bill going on, but I think if there's a priority list established by the department, I think that's the way it ought to go out of this bill. And I well understand the political process that may lead to a different priority list. But if the department puts value on that because they have developed a process, then I would like to see us use it.
Let me just respond on that. I'm under the impression, I could be wrong, but I am under the impression that the department has prioritized the projects, and they have done it with the criteria they outlined in a previous meeting.
Right, and we have not followed that priority list. As they prioritize it, as I understand.
Well, it's my understanding that we have put them all on the list, and we have therefore not rearranged the priorities. It would be incorrect to characterize this as a prioritization of either the department or the committee. I wasn't intending to put these in a priority order.
I get it. Right.
I suppose we could go back and, I don't know how they turned up in this order on the bill, but Marla, why don't you tell us how they turned up that way?
I'm Marla Burke from Senator Adams' office. The reason they turned up in the list, the way they turned up is, that was the list we asked DEC for, a prioritized public health list. That was the list. After we got the list, they noticed that it didn't go 199.98, etc. It was all jumbled up, so they had to figure out what made their computer turn out the list like this. So they fixed that up, and on the 18th, we got an updated list. It contains all the same projects, but the order is different. We had intended in putting it in the same priority as the departments. No monkeying around with it.
So there's no problem in having the bill changed to the list, the way the sequence or the order that was submitted in the March 8th?
Well, March 18th is the...
Well, there's a new one then.
That's March 18th. And we don't have any problem. If you want to re-sort it, that would be fine.
Mr. Chairman, the priority list that I believe is in your packet that you had in front of you during the last hearing is the most recent list. Bit of explanation. The original question that was asked to us, would you tell us, the commissioner asked me, would you please make a run based on public health score, the 500 score or the 200 score. And I gave that to him. Mm-hmm. We ran off to a hearing very hurriedly. And then that list was, he handed that list out at a oversight committee with, I believe, the House Finance Committee. And fairly soon that list came circulated, and I think it got used a little more than what the original intent was. And I have now refined that prioritization. However, the bill did get generated on the first list, not the more refined list.
Any other comments on that?
Mr. Chairman, I would just say that if it, again, has a priority, you know, in the class and so on,
right.
And there's no problem with the sponsor.
No problem.
It would be good, it seems to me, to include that. However, as long as you know, if it went forward, people didn't think that was a priority list. That's only the concern would be, well, let's go down to item number 12 and we're going to cut off. Then it could certainly make a difference, and there may be some real health and other factors that mean we should have done 13 instead of a cutoff at 12. That's all my concern is.
While we're on that subject, Mr. Chairman, I was informed by Senator Adams' office that on the second page there was one project that was on the list that somehow was inadvertently missed, and that was $37,000 for CHEVAC that appears on the list but was not included in the legislation, and that was given as testimony by Marla Burke at the introduction of the legislation. And at the proper time, I would move that that be included in the community substitute as well.
Okay, certainly entertain that. Okay, so is it the sense of the committee that you'd like to put these into a CS with a priority, showing the priority as established by the department for each class, but not as to the different classes of projects?
I think, Mr. Chairman, I think it'd be easier to track as well for the committee and subsequent committees to look at the list and compare it with the legislation.
Okay, so you would prefer, is that what you're saying? You would prefer that? Senator Sugarlewski?
Mr. Chairman, I would with, you know, can we just ask that you include CHEVAC then? Is CHEVAC in our list?
It's on the list on the March 18th and the March 8th list, but it's not in the legislation.
Yeah, I should.
The prioritization on the two different categories of Village Safe Water programs, the one is a higher priority than the other. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. Now the department does the department make a cross program judgment between the municipal grant program and the Village Safe Water program?
Mr. Chairman, no, we do not. Always in the past, the money's been broken out into two separate allocations, and then within that allocation, it's been prioritized.
Right.
So, no,
okay.
I think it's, I would have a lot of trouble judging a solid waste problem against a wastewater problem in a rural community, in urban
right.
versus a rural.
Okay, then perhaps what we should do then is. I guess it would be obvious that the priorities are not established between Village Water, Village Safe Water versus the municipal grant program. And I'd like the record to reflect that.
Yes,
unless somebody wants to debate that.
I think that would be a good way to show it, because you do need to include two different statutory references for those two allocations.
Okay, would somebody want to put that in the form of a motion?
Just a moment, if I could. Well, Mr. Chairman, on your point, since the things come out of different categories, that by itself indicates that, you know, in each category, it is prioritized. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And the categories are set out because the programs are different. So I think that reaches your goal. What kind of motion should I make?
Well, a motion to show them in priority order within the bill, within the CS.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we have prepared a committee substitute for Senate Bill number 179 that would reflect by priority the various, by department priority, the various categories of funding for water, sewer, and solid waste projects. That do it?
I think so. Are you clear on that?
Yes, I believe
that. And ask unanimous consent.
Now, Senator Hoffman, did you want to make your motion on?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would move to add the project for CHEVAC listed as laundry and sewer disposal line for the total sum of $37,000 to the committee substitute.
Asking unanimous consent. Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the motion passes. Okay. Did you want to talk about something else before we talk about Marshall? Or?
No, that's all that I have.
Okay. Go ahead and proceed with the explanation on Marshall.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Dan Easton, Deputy Director of the Division of Environmental Quality. Keith Gelman.
I'm Keith Gelman, Acting Director of Environmental Quality. And as I understand, the last committee hearing, there were several questions raised that fall within our division's responsibilities, and it's our intent to try to address those issues today if we have the time. We have several handouts that I believe will handle some of the questions. The first question that we have a handout for was Senator Zaroff had asked for interpretation as to what impact MARPOL is going to have on Western Alaskan communities. And we have a copy of a study that was conducted that we'd like to pass out, and we don't expect to take questions on that today since you don't have a chance to read it, but we would be happy to entertain any questions at a later date that you might have on it. It will show the impacts of the federal legislation on the solid waste handling requirements for the primarily the fishing fleets to come into the communities out there. We'll be happy to try to answer questions now if you have them, or we certainly attempt to do it later on. The second question that was asked regarded the impact of the surface water treatment rule on the federal drinking water requirement. We had a handout prepared for that too, but it should be arriving shortly, so we have to defer that and hand it out at the close of the meeting or leave it available. In essence, what that does is that the Federal Clean Water or Safe Drinking Water Act Amendment 1986 required that water that was not the surface water that was not filtered would require filtration unless it could prove through a series of tests and procedures that filtration was not required. That will impact a significant number of Alaska's communities' drinking water supplies that rely on surface water. That includes most of the coastal communities, unfortunately, Kodiak, Ketchikan, Sitka, Cordova. There could be a significant expenditure of funds required under implementation of that rule. And this handout will define that process more fully than what I am at the present time. Yeah.
Senator,
thank you, Chairman. Seems to me that it was my understanding there that the state had an opportunity to respond to this by December 31 of last year. And were we involved with anything with the regulations that were being drawn up, or were we neglectant in speaking out on behalf of our communities and the expenses that would be involved with this?
Senator Zaroff, closer, we were not negligent on that. This was a federal law that that we have commented on in its making, and Congress was very aware of the impacts to all communities nationwide, and Alaska certainly is not the only state that's being severely impacted by this. We have estimated all along that there's going to be a significant impact, and we've commented on that. And in fact, as of this time, Alaska does not have the regulations that require this. This is being implemented under a federal law. If the state is to retain primacy in the state drinking water program, we will be required to adopt regulations similar to the federal program. And there is one main benefit for doing that. It puts the state in the driver's seat as in developing compliance schedules for coming into compliance with the federal law. And I won't say we can extend that compliance date indefinitely, but we can certainly stretch it to the point where it makes it a lot easier for communities to comply. And that would be our attempt if we do seek to retain primacy and develop those regulations.
Have you included funds in the governor's budget request to achieve that?
To my knowledge, no. Gary could probably answer that question.
The answer is no. It's our estimate that it would cost $150 to $170 million ultimately.
I'm not talking about the capital funds. I'm talking about retaining primacy or achieving primacy.
Oh, the primacy. We are hopeful that our operating budget will allow us the opportunity to develop those regulations, depending on how that comes out of committees.
My question was, were funds included in the governor's budget request?
Yes, they were.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions on that? Senator
Zara? No, I'm still in shock. It's going to take a lot of money to do that. It's pretty expensive.
Yeah, I wish we didn't have to.
I'm trying to figure out what the problem is in Alaska. Oh, are we on? Sorry. I guess I'm trying to figure out what the problem is there in Alaska. We've only been drinking this water now for,
Yeah, I don't know. One of those other examples of Congress.
Mr. Chairman, the concern nationally, at least as it relates to Alaska, is the potential for Giardia being in the surface waters. It is not effectively treated by any other method other than filtration. We personally feel in the agency that there are much higher priorities for public health, and most of those that are on the list that you're considering today would fall within that range. People who do not have water or drinking totally untreated water certainly should have a priority over those water systems that are managed and chlorinated, but just not filtered. So we would propose, if we have control of this program, that the priority would be given to those communities that really have much less capabilities right now.
What about private systems? They're also required to, I don't know if you call it private, but a community water system that might be a private utility or something like that. I'm thinking like College Utilities of Fairbanks.
Yes, sir. Example.
They'd have to come under this.
If they had a surface water supply, they would be covered under. Groundwater supplies are theoretically filtered through the soil and therefore safe. But,
what about now in the stuff that I saw, they said shallow wells are also sometimes considered.
If the well looks like it would have a recharge from a surface water source, an infiltration gallery, for example, in a stream bed, that could be considered a surface water source even though you're drawing it from below the surface of the stream bed.
But most wells would not be considered.
Most wells should have no difficulty.
Okay, if there are any other questions on that aspect, we could. Are you prepared? Well, I'll just let you go ahead.
You had a hand up for Marshall. For surface water treatment rule, Mr. Wright. The other topic that we understood that came up for discussion was a concern expressed by Representative Lincoln's office that water contamination that's been experienced in the community of Marshall has not been responded to properly by the department. And I would like to say that we're as disappointed as anybody else that this response has been as slow as it is, but I'd also like to say that I think we've been very responsive in trying to achieve results. It's just that circumstances due to the contamination problem and source, the isolation, the weather conditions have not resulted in as expedient a solution as we might have expected. We have drafted a response letter back to the representative, which from Commissioner Sander, which I believe has been provided to you in your packets, which lays out the chronology of events that have taken place in our response. And as you will note, within several days of hearing about this, samples were taken, analyzed, determination was made that the water was contaminated, a health advisory was issued, and we've been working continuously since then, coordinating with DES and the Public Health Service, who put in the project, to get a temporary water system in place. The temporary system is in place. It is providing pure water. It is not hooked up to the distribution system since it's a low-volume well. This well provides about 8 gallons a minute capacity and is set up as a watering point. PHS is constructing a housing over this watering point to protect it more so from the elements. It is designed to self-drain. There should be no freezing problems with it if it's properly operated, which means they don't put a hose on the end of it to allow it to freeze, which happened once. Our concerns right now are to develop the long-term scenario on how to fix the problem. We've taken several approaches on that. We've worked with the Farmers Home Administration to assist the city in applying for a $350,000 grant, which could do one of two things. It could either treat the system, which is contaminated by putting carbon absorption system on it, or air strippers to treat the supply, or if that proves unsuccessful after further testing, we could use the money to develop a new source. The problem with developing a new source is that the community has a history of contaminated wells in the, throughout the town. There's half a dozen to eight wells that have petroleum contamination. We plan to go out there as soon as the weather allows, when the snow melts and the seasonal frost goes out of the ground, and trace the extent of the contamination. At this point in time, that expenditure would be somewhat inefficiently applied. We propose to go out about the end of April and do use the 470 funds to do the groundwater investigation, find out where the problem is occurring, and using that information, base the permanent solution by knowing where to put the new well. We're afraid that if we went out there and put a new well in now without knowing where the contamination is and what direction it's heading, we would just be putting another well down in a contaminated location. So, unfortunately, the process does require a sequential investigation followed by the construction activities. At this time, we do not know whether we'll be successful in getting the $350,000 grant from Farmers Home. We estimate that the cost could be up to $500,000 to relocate the water supply. We're suggesting that you may wish to consider this in your capital project list as well as a potential appropriation. If we do not need the money, if we get the grant, we would not obviously spend it on this project. If we needed more than the $350,000, it would be available through the appropriation process. I'd like to extend the department's position that at no time do we feel that we have been non-responsive to the city of Marshall, but due to the circumstances, we have been perhaps reacting slower than the city would wish, and we can certainly understand their frustration by having to haul water, and nobody would like to do that. We're ready and willing and able to work with them to see this process through.
Other questions?
I have a question. How does this your response to this problem relate to the Potter Marsh or the one out going to Wasilla?
The Peters Creek?
The Peters Creek problem.
I believe the main difference was that happened during a better time of the year. We were able to get out there and investigate it under better weather conditions, and the city of Anchorage had the resources to come in and put in the temporary water system immediately.
And then how was water able, how were the residents able to get the water?
The city of Anchorage came in and put in initially an above ground line laid across the street and 2 yards connected to a private well that they had got access to. Eventually, they came in and connected to the Acutna water line once that came by and put in a permanent installation of buried lines. But the temporary response was to come in with an above ground supply, which the city had the resources to do. And I'd like to emphasize that our response capabilities are limited to what we can legally spend out of the 470 account, which is investigation and cleanup if we can't find a responsible party. We cannot use that funds for capital improvements. So we're limited to either an appropriation that, through the regular processes or using whatever Division of Emergency Services can come up with or leaning on PHS in this case. We're trying to do a combination of all three to resolve this problem.
So it's your recommendation that an appropriation be made that may not have to be utilized?
That's correct, sir.
What is the, I didn't realize the Farmers Home Administration provide funds for the community water systems.
I'm not knowledgeable about the process either.
This is the first year that Congress appropriated some money for emergency situations for small water systems, and they have yet to give any grants out underneath that program, and this will be one of the first applications that Alaska submitted.
What about, you said the Public Health Service is putting a house over the temporary well?
That's correct.
Now, what is the, I guess I don't understand either the responsibility and the relationship between the state and the Public Health Service with regard to these different, well, is it like each village is different and sometimes it's federal, sometimes it's state, sometimes local? Or?
In this particular case, the U.S. Public Health Service was working on a project in Marshall. I believe they were working on the laundromat. So they had people who were in town. They had a construction superintendent who was there. And the state, Village Safe Water Program, sent the remote maintenance worker there, and the remote maintenance worker, along with the Public Health Service personnel, did a lot of the hooking pipes up. So they had people there, we and the state had people there, and they both worked together.
How is it, though? I mean, what is the Public Health Service's responsibility, or I don't know if that's the right word, but why is the some communities can get a public health service system, some have to do their own, and some get a state? I mean, I can understand the state and the local, but I don't understand how Public Health Service decides where they're going to go. And
almost all of the U.S. Public Health Service's money is connected with HUD housing projects, and there's a certain allotment per house unit that is constructed. And then that is what drives the Public Health Service into that community.
I see. So they do, independent from HUD, they wouldn't be coming into a community?
They, well, in most cases, they would not. Some years, they may get some discretionary money and go to some priority places, but most of the time, it's driven solely by the HUD projects.
All right. Thank you. Are there any other questions? Okay. Did you cover the six areas that you wanted to cover?
I believe so. Yes.
I had one other question that was brought to our attention yesterday. The Water Resources Board appeared before the Resources Committee and talked about the need for as-built plans on many of the village water systems. And I was surprised to find out that that wasn't a common practice. And thought you might be able to respond to that situation.
I think that the answer to that is very similar to the question about why don't they all look the same. I do have as-builts on the projects that my staff works in. We do as-builts at the end of the project. I do a final report at the end of the project. And I, for a lot of reasons, and one of the reasons is so that the people who have been responsible for appropriating the money know where the money went. And so I do as-builts. I don't know why there aren't always as-builts done.
Is that, if you oversee a grant that comes under the Village Safe Water Program, would you require an as-built in that case?
Yes.
So are you saying that it would only be those grants that came under the municipal grants that you did not oversee, where as-builts may not have been done?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Well, I guess we'll do something about that in another time. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, just a question. Do we have Marshall taken care of?
No, I assume that Senator Hobbs is going to make a motion.
You were going to make a motion.
I was going to lie.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we add a section to include the community of Marshall for our water and sewer what would be the title? Water, just under water and sewer?
I would call it water system rehabilitation.
Water system rehabilitation for the sum of $350,000.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the motion passes. Okay, is there any other thing to discuss before we, I guess,
Mr.
need a
Chairman,
motion to pass the bill?
The only thing you would need to determine is perhaps Gary could respond as to what category that should be and what order of preference or what priority order it should have.
I would put it in the first category.
In the first category?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman? I would move, well, first, do we need to move an adoption?
I think we've adopted a CS and we just amended it. All we need now is a motion to move it from committee.
All right. I would move the committee substitute as amended individual recommendations. Ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, bill moves from committee. Okay. Next bill on the agenda is really a resolution, joint resolution number 12. Prime sponsor, Senator Strzelczewski, is here, so I'll let you
Mr. Chairman,
introduce the bill.
I'll be very brief. Senator Stevens introduced a piece of legislation, S-49, that would, and it was co-sponsored by Senator Murkowski, would share OCS revenues with state and global governments. And with the proposed amount of potential revenue, I think it's certainly desirable if there's any way we can see a share for coastal states, and of course that's going to impact us, to share in that federal revenue that would come from OCS development. Right now, states do not receive dollars. Under this pending legislation, each adjacent coastal state would receive a third of the OCS revenue. And that state's receipt would be shared between the state and those communities that are impacted by the development. They also call for setting up of a 4.5% of OCS sale lease income, and that would come from sale income, royalties, other revenues, and money for that would be made available to communities for energy development projects, and Alaska might be in a position to be able to attempt to get some of those funds in addition to the regular revenue sharing. And Senator Stevens has laid out in the information I've provided you some potentials, and of course they're pretty stupendous, but that all depends on what they find out there. But I think it would benefit Alaska, so I would ask your support.
Okay, are there any questions? Senator Pierce. Not for this
one. Until the next one.
Okay. Senator Strzelczewski, is the royalty share that the federal government keeps on offshore leases 1/6 or 1/8?
Frank, do you know that, Mr. Holman?
No, we could look that up.
No, I don't have that information.
I'm sorry, I missed that. What?
I just asked whether the royalty share on federal offshore lease sales is 1/6 or 1/8.
I don't know the answer to that.
Are we going to wait for that? Or?
No, we don't. It's curiosity.
We'll find it and get back to you.
Is there a royalty share?
Yeah, they keep a royalty, but I don't know.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I just wonder if we could extend this out to capture some of the revenue generated by some of those offshore fishing processing
businesses. Why not?
Resolution. Okay, I have Scott Burgess signed up to testify. Scott,
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Scott Burgess, the Alaska Municipal League. I'm probably remiss in probably assuming the obvious in your last bill you took that we would support that legislation, but also wanted to speak in favor of this one. It's been on our policy statement for a number of years. This issue is up 84-85, is very active. We got through one house of Congress. It didn't pass in the other. Senator Stevens Senator Murkowski and Representative Young were very active in this, and I was back last week, and the Senator raised it again, that there may be a chance again, that now is the time, perhaps before we go too far in the ANWR, to get this issue before Congress and dealt with. And so we certainly support the legislation and resolution.
Are there any questions of committee members? Thank you.
I would move Senate Bill Resolution 12 from committee with individual recommendations. So,
is there any objection? Hearing no objection, work with the bill in action committee.
Resources.
Okay, the next bill we have on the schedule is Senate Bill number 182. It's by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. It's a piece of legislation that was requested by the Municipal League. Basically, simply would allow the municipalities to do jointly that which they can do, to do jointly what they can do individually now in their investment activities. This worked well in other states, and it makes a lot of sense to me. And so I'd like to invite Scott Burgess up to the table again to provide some testimony on it. We've got several other people around the state that would like to testify as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Scott Burgess with the Alaska Municipal League. Appreciate the committee's introduction of this legislation. This is an item we've been working on for a number of years. Specifically, 2 years ago, the membership of the league did request that the board pursue the development of an investment pool for municipalities to basically keep their short-term money, which may be necessary for payroll or construction projects or whatever, and by pooling the money, create a larger amount, which would get a better return. Obviously, the concerns would be, first, security, that the money is there, two, liquidity, that they can get it when they need it. But again, by pooling the money, get a better return, therefore interest rate on their money as a group. Basically, the legislation, however, is authorizing legislation. Unlike some states, Alaska does not have what's referred to as an interlocal act or a joint powers act. So like we did with the insurance program, we are coming before the legislature to ask for specific legislation to allow the league or whoever else in the legislation, another entity, to develop an investment pool for municipal funds. And the league does intend to do that, and in fact has a committee that's working. It's chaired by Jerome Selby, our president. Dave Rose is on it, Judy Slager, Ellen Braden, Ross Kinney, finance officers from Fairbanks, Anchorage, and Kenai, Harold Ivanoff from the city of Atkinsuk, Kevin Ritchie from Juneau are on the committee. We've hired an individual to help us write an RFP, which is out on the street, obviously, to find folks to help us in this effort. Obviously, the hiring of that would be subject to the passage of the legislation. We did do a survey last summer among municipalities and school districts to get some information. I gave you a summary in my justification sheet. I won't go through all that, but let me just, we got 52 responses. There are 165 municipalities, 55 school districts. Interesting, one thing to improve their investment program, we asked, was the question. Obviously, probably obvious, the response, the number one response was to increase interest earnings. But number two, interestingly enough, was to become better informed yourself. We do have municipalities that aren't as sophisticated as some of our larger ones and don't have the investment options or perhaps even a bank in their community. We see, in addition to providing the benefits of higher interest and security with their investments, but also assistance with their investments. We asked them if they had concern to us with whether they had a written investment policy or an ordinance specifying the types of investments that they could put their money in, and it was almost 50-50. Some said yes, some said no. In terms of the amount of money that we're talking about, in total invested funds, again, of the people responded to, we had ranges So the range was somewhere between $400 million and $600 million. The total invested, total interest from the responses as of FY89 was $66 million. So the potential is there. This program, if the legislation were to authorize it and the league were to be able to put it together, would be voluntary. No one would be required to put their money into it. They would evaluate this as one other option for their money, and perhaps not put it all in. They may not. So I don't want to belabor the issue. This is authorizing legislation. We intend to, if the legislation were to pass, we intend to follow it up and provide a service to municipalities and school districts around the state to as an option.
Chairman, so I'm interested in the information we got from the Department of Revenue, and they asked for an amendment that would allow the state, and I don't believe that's been made in the committee substitute, has it, to enter into agreements. And I find that rather fascinating to think that the state would be the one of managing the pool. Am I missing something?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sturgiluski, I did talk to Mr. Rex Winkle at the Department of Revenue, and he asked the question, why don't you do this to the state? We certainly considered that. We've been talking about this for a number of years. Basically, the municipalities feel that they'd like better control over the money, would like to do it themselves, and feel that they can do that. It's possible that we can't. And if we can't, perhaps we need the volume from the state. My response to the letter is, if the state would like to invest, if we put this program together and they want to invest in their funds, you know, perhaps you should adopt the amendment that they suggest. The second part of their memo, in terms of running it, we do have an RFP, and if the state would like to bid on managing this fund for us, we'd certainly welcome that bid.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of other questions. Oh, I just found that intriguing that the state would be interested, but I think I'd check it after SBS, but just a couple more questions. We have spent a tremendous amount of time structuring the Board of Trustees of the Permanent Fund, allowable investments, management, et cetera, and really, in a sense, what we're doing is just saying that whatever's done, you'll do out there. It seems to me interesting. You can have an investment pool, but I don't know. You can't really do anything that has a statutory basis under that would outline specifics. I mean, you can't pass any laws because you don't have that authority. So I'm just wondering how pools in other states work, whether they do more than just this very broad concept that you can form a pool and you can go do it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sturgiluski, we have looked at legislation in other states, and back on your original question, there are two essentially types of investment pools. In your material, it shows there are quite a few states that have investment pools. They are either within the state treasury, somehow run by the state, or independents, whether they be trusts or whatever. Our intention is to do the latter, basically a private operation. Our intent would be to set up a trust, essentially, do it on a private nonprofit basis, and basically it's not much different than you and I getting together and deciding to jointly invest our funds and hopefully get a better rate of return, and we'd have to have some agreement in terms of how we'd split that return. But it's basically just two organizations getting together to do something jointly. We can't do anything that we would still have to pass bylaws, and there'd be a cooperative agreement between each of the participants and the entity that's formed that says, we agree to do this, you agree to do that, and it's basically you sign on the dotted line. I'm not sure I'm responding to your,
well,
to your question.
Well, I guess that if this were to go forward, it seems like there has to be a mechanism so that there's a fiduciary responsibility, and I'm just wondering if, it's very broad. And I would hope that this board watches very carefully that whole investment, but there's it could be fraught with danger if it were not carefully drawn. And, you know, many of the areas, those participants will be giving up a great deal of authority over the management of the funds. And so I don't know enough about the concept of how it's used to feel totally comfortable with what I see.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sturgiluski, of course, once the legislation is done and whether we can see if it's even feasible in its best case scenario, everyone, in terms of before they sign on that dotted line, is going to have to see what the relationship is. In putting the RFP together, we basically put an investment policy, which we recommend when people respond to RFP. It's much tighter than municipalities are allowed to invest in right now. In other words, we're going to be in government securities, very safe instruments, because, as I said, our first concern would be security. Even if you didn't get any interest off of it, you want to make sure you get your principal back. And you want to be able to get it back quickly. You don't want to be invested in something that you can't get it out when you need it. Like, to me, payroll. I mean, that's as immediate as we're talking about. In terms of the fiduciary, this, at least the concept, and again, this is being drafted, we're working with an attorney to draft up the documents, the bylaws, would be under the league, and they would be responsible. Mm-hmm. We would set up a committee or board that would basically be the participants in the program, much like our insurance program. Mm-hmm. But yes, we'd be responsible to the entities. But I think that it's going to be, I mean, the way it's set up and the way most of these programs are set up are very secure. Obviously not as, because they're not as high risk, they're potentially not as high a return, but there's also, you have the downside protection. Mr. Chairman, just one comment. We do have Ellen Braden available, and Judy Slager, both finance officers, Anchorage and Fairbanks, on the phone and or on the teleconference. They're working with me on this committee, and to the degree they can respond to some of the concerns as far as the financial aspects.
Mr. Chairman, yes. One more question. Mm-hmm. Do you foresee that your charge to participants would only be enough to cover your operating expenses of getting your people together, of whatever fees you would need for the investment of the funds, and, you know, compensation for if you picked a management fund, would be limited to that? You would not charge so that you would start to build up any kind of an equity for this new entity or this new trust. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lucy, that's correct. This is a nonprofit operation.
Well, but nonprofits oftentimes have a bottom line. They have retained earnings for various purposes.
Mr. Chairman, the only way this program is going to be successful is that if we keep our costs down. I mean, the intent is to get the best return to the participants. Mm-hmm. And in order to do that, we're going to have to keep what is referred to as basis points as low as possible,
sure.
Paying the investment counselors, the custodian fees, the administrative fees.
Yeah, they've got to be able to attract participants, and if they don't, you know, if they were to start building equity instead of paying back the returns, they wouldn't be able to attract communities. Yeah, it was my intention, if there are no more questions for Scott, to go to Ellen Braden. You're welcome to stay at the table, Scott. To Ellen, Ellen and Judy Slager. Why don't we start with Ellen and then go to Judy for their testimony. Are they online or...
This is Ellen, yes, I'm on now. I think Scott did a very good job in his presentation, and there's very little that I can add to that. I do have some additional background information on investment pools. They were started about 15 years ago, and there are 29 states now that have them. One of the advantages for an investment pool, in addition to the liquidity and security and the yield that Scott mentioned, is the advantage to the participants of security of their funds, not only in the things that Scott had mentioned, but also in the professional management and the diversification of instruments that a participant would have. And also in the third-party safekeeping of the instruments, securities themselves, which is costly to a community if they have to go out and procure these services individually.
Ellen, are you aware of Senator Strzelczewski seemed to be expressing some concern about the lack of a outline, a strict outline and limitation and that sort of thing, like we generally do with some of our other public corporations. Personally, I'm comfortable with leaving the authority and responsibility up to the municipalities to do that. However, I'm wondering if other states have been have taken a more comprehensive approach and put all that stuff in the state law as opposed to leaving it up to the municipalities to formulate those, that set of guidelines.
Well, I think Scott touched on that when he mentioned the investment policy for the pool. The policy as developed not only limits the investment of the pool to very secure instruments such as treasury bills and government issues, but also other types of investments that carry very highest ratings of professional rating services throughout the country, such as Standard & Poor's and Moody's. Also, this pool is going to be invested in securities that have a very short maturity, so that you don't run the risk of having to sell your longer term securities at the wrong time in the market and suffer a loss. I know from talking to some of the treasurers from the lower 48 states that do participate in these pools. They're very, very positive comments. Some of the people that I've talked to participate in them exclusively. Some of them use the pools as part of their investments and invest their funds in other instruments directly. The investment policy itself, of course, will be it's going to be up to the individual participants to determine whether or not they want to invest in the pool based on the types of instruments that the pool will invest in. I hope that answers your question.
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, I understand looking at Oregon, for example. Now they use apparently the state treasurer for their investment person, but they do have a number of definitions and what kind of investments can be made, a number of details. And I'm just wondering, in those states that are proceeding as you're recommending here, where the municipalities would be responsible, if the legislation in those states is as simple, just to allow for the establishment of the pools, but really not to give any guidelines or directions.
Go ahead,
Ms. Joan, just to respond to that, I think that we did provide, just to show you as an example, a state program and some of the documentation. Of course, with a state program, you are the legislative body, and you're talking basically in ours. We will have bylaws which will essentially lay out the duties of the board, the investment practices, etc. Those will be bylaws which will be part of the cooperative agreement and will limit what the quote entity can do through its bylaws. And so I guess that would be the only difference, is that you would, that's the other part that you don't see here, because you're not directing a state agency to do something for
that's
yourself.
That's right. I realize that, but
or
I
for
wondered
the people
if
of Alaska.
Are there areas that, in direct response to my question, I'll ask again: are there areas that allow for the municipality to do it through such a mechanism as you were suggesting, and what do those statutes permitting statutes, what do they require?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Sturzaluski, I can certainly get you some copies of other states that have a separate program and provide that information to you, and we can certainly look at that. But I think that, you know, our intent here is basically to leave that to the people of making a decision of whether to invest in the program or not, whether they're comfortable with what's the controlling documents, the bylaws. But I certainly can provide that. I don't know it off the top of my head, and certainly can provide that.
Let me just say, remind you, Scott, of something you told me previously, and that is that some states have very broad joint powers acts that allow municipalities to do any number of things jointly that they can do individually. And in that case, they certainly wouldn't be laying out the specific terms under which they could do a joint investment pool. So I would assume that that some states have laws on the books authorizing this that are general in nature and no more, you know, no more elaborate than what we're proposing here. Okay, let's go then to Judy Slager. Judy, did you have a testimony to present?
This is Judy Slager, the Chief Financial Officer from Fairbanks Minister Rural. Certainly appreciate your time spending on this. A couple of things I'd like to add. One, that I don't know that we made it real clear that this proposal would require that our legislative body pass a resolution that would, in fact, join the pool. And the treasurer, the finance director, whoever does the cash management in that municipality then could use the pool if they chose to. In our circumstance, in Fairbanks, we have a portfolio in the neighborhood of about $60 million. And what we would do is we look at what the pool is doing and then look at what other kinds of investments we normally make and say, well, the pool's doing better right now than some of the other things we make. We put our money in the pool. But I want you to know that the pool, we would not join the pool unless it's authorized investments were as strict or more strict than our investment ordinance. And in this case, they are. So when we talk about local control, the pool is actually going to be controlled by all the legislative bodies that join the pool. Not the finance officers, not the treasurers. They're going to be the elected officials that, in fact, who do have the fiduciary responsibility for the investments in their community. One of the things that we found out when we were doing the survey last year, or the, you know, getting information, is, and also we found out from having finance officers meetings, is that there are a lot of smaller communities around the state who have their money perhaps in a savings account because they don't even have the time nor the expertise to even find out how to go about putting their money in something that is as safe or safer. And there are a lot of folks out there that express interest in having a pool that has got some options and increasing the investment options. The Fairbanks North Star Pool, like I said, would probably use the pool occasionally. Some communities might use it a lot. And I think it would be an advantage to how we do business. And when Ellen Scott said something about the cost of third-party safekeeping, which means that your securities are not in the hand of your broker, but they're held by somebody, an agent of the local government, our borough pays someplace in the neighborhood of $20,000 for that service right now. If I could cut that in half, that's $10,000 that we could spend on keeping a park maintained, or et cetera. Even if we got the same amount of, well, you understand what I'm saying? So I think that there might be some advantages in having a larger portfolio available to us. I know that there would be to other folks in the state. So we'd certainly be glad to work with you. And also, in my opinion, I think that the amendment proposed money in this pool also, and that would even, that might even increase the pool's options as far as viability. That's all I have. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Judy. Next, I would go to, unless there was questions for Judy, I would go to Brian Andrews and Vern Boss, I guess it is, from the Department. Treasury, Division of Treasury, Department of Revenue.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Brian Andrews. I'm the comptroller for the Treasury Division. And on my left is Vern Boss. He's the cash management officer for the Treasury Division within the Department of Revenue. We're here this afternoon more to entertain questions from the committee and you, Mr. Chairman, and not particularly to give any testimony.
Would you explain the, I'm not sure I have that proposed amendment.
It would be attached to this, didn't it, Ben?
Yes, I do have that. Why don't you explain that for us?
Quite briefly, Mr. Chairman, when we reviewed Senate Bill 182 and the companion bill 199, it seemed to make logical sense to us that that these bills incorporate into this objective to use the existing mechanisms that already are here in the state. You know, the statute, the investment prudent man statutes are already here in place as far as what we can cannot do from a security standpoint. It also seemed to make logical sense to go ahead and use the facilities of Treasury, its expertise, and the funds within the general investment fund to make this a viable opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman?
Senator?
Through the chair. So you're, are you going so far as to say you would want to manage that money and say, commingle that or set up in a separate pool, or what are you saying?
Our objective, Mr. Chair, is to manage this participant pool as well as be a participant to it.
Mm-hmm. So you might see one of, let's say that the general fund, I believe, runs around $900 million, that you might put your $900 million along with $300 million from out there, so you've got a $1.2 billion fund.
Correct. And the cost that I have broken out in this analysis for you was based on a pool size of $500 million. Obviously, a pool of $1.2 billion, that overall cost effect would be reduced again by half, approximately half. As the pool size increases, the incremental cost would not, there wouldn't be an even incremental cost upwards, but the cost would be diminished.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what you're talking about really, would it be through existing statutes? And I guess I would question that. It really doesn't seem that what we have on the books would be amenable to, say, a board composed of municipal officials who would have oversight. And would you foresee, I mean, looking at your amendment proposed, that would allow the state to set up a pool. But since it would be a state operation, wouldn't that need a great deal more in terms of a statute of setting up what the state's responsibility would be and how you would have an oversight committee, et cetera, et cetera? Or would you just see individual municipalities dealing with the Department of Revenue under your scenario?
Mr. Chair, Senator, mm-hmm. The scenario that I perceive is one where the municipalities would deal directly with the Treasury Division.
Yeah. Which is a very different concept than the is foreseen by the sponsors, it seems to me. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Also, Mike Worley has signed up to testify. Mike, would you like to join us at the table?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mike Worley. I'm representing the Department of Community and Regional Affairs today. Very quickly, we fully support the bill as it is drafted. We have submitted a position paper to the committee, I won't belabor the points we've made or go on any longer unless the committee has questions of the department.
Okay, are there any questions from committee members? Okay, thank you. Senator Chairman,
I was going to ask you, have you seen that amendment?
Mr. Chairman,
proposed amendment.
Senator Jacques, I have not seen the, I've not been able to analyze the Department of Revenue's amendment. We were aware of conversations that occurred between AML and the Department of Revenue. I guess as an advocate of municipal governments, we tend to take the municipalities, follow the municipalities' lead, being the Alaska Municipal League's lead. AML, of course, I've been associated with AML for about 13 years now, and I know that many of the most talented and capable people in Alaska are members of the AML. So we would assume that if the state of Alaska came up with an investment scheme that was an improvement over theirs, that they would certainly take advantage of that. And so we would naturally follow the lead again.
Thank you. Mike, could you explain the CES? Apparently you caught a problem with the existing bill. And would you explain the CS? Do committee members have the CS in their files? Okay, the CS is in your packet and titled CS.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to. In reviewing the original bill, under B of the bill, we discovered that there was a phrase that that said a service area within the unorganized borough would qualify as a public entity, and we weren't sure what that might be referring to. So we weren't aware of service areas in the unorganized borough. So we did do some checking on that, and of course worked with Scott Burgess, Burgess of the League, who tracked down the fact that apparently this language was included in the original draft. And we're not really sure why, but it seemed to be superfluous language, so we all agreed in a very friendly way that it would be removed.
Any questions on that? Want to see us?
But if there's one out there, let us know.
We certainly will.
Mr. Chairman, I would move for committee adoption of May Substitute Percent Bill Number 182 and ask unanimous consent.
Is there an objection? Hearing no objection, then we will adopt the CS.
I would move the CS for Senate Bill 182 CRA with individual recommendations. And the zero is coming from revenue, and the zero is coming from CNRA.
Okay. Is there an objection?
Mr. Chairman. I don't object, but I want to pursue and would appreciate information from representative of the Municipal League as to what others do. I just feel this is it gives a lot of authority out there, and I don't know what responsibility the state should have in addition to this, so I'll carry forward on that.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's see. We had a motion? Okay, is there objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, the bill moves to committee. Any other business to come before the committee? If not, committee is adjourned.